Hey, this is a wonderful day to be together, and it's a wonderful weekend. And I know a lot of you who are gathered here this morning weren't able to be here with us Friday. Friday we had one full gathering. Today we've got two full gatherings, so pretty much do the math. One and two weren't able to be here on Friday. But I really want you to get that Resurrection Sunday doesn't happen without the darkness of Good Friday. And Easter is not just this sort of standalone day. But if the Easter Sunday is just part of your tradition, if it's that one or the other of two Sundays that you come, I'm just stoked that you're here. Honestly, being here for those two Sundays a year, you are genuinely picking the highlights. Like, I'm stoked. If you're going to pick two, you pick those two. And if today's the only one you do, even better, because you get this glimpse of what this entire thing is about. And today, that's what I want to just encourage you with. I'm not going to take a long time. But that morning, that first day of the week, all those years ago, people didn't have the same expectation that we do today. For us today, this is celebration. This is big. This is like the whole point of why Jesus came, was to defeat the work of darkness. This is it. But that morning, all those years ago, they didn't have that. In fact, what Lauren read about the women going to the tomb to actually embalm Jesus was an honoring thing, but it was honoring him in death and in finality and in loss, and that was their expectation. Not just the loss of life, but the loss of hope, the loss of direction, the loss of purpose for those that had walked with Jesus and known him. Friday had been this descent into darkness and into despair for many of them. And Jesus' friends and those who had followed him had actually really retreated into hiding. Like, they weren't just even able to publicly mourn. They were in hiding behind bolted doors and bolted shutters. But this third day, hope dawned anew. And it wasn't just light dawning on a day and proclaiming just another day. This was light that dawned proclaiming a whole new age, a whole new era, a whole new dawning, not just of sunrise, but of grace. The grace of God that was going to be opened up for all humanity, for all time, until Jesus returns and brings an end to it all. And the powers of this world, and this is what we talked about Friday, the powers of the day did everything that they could to silence Jesus, to deny his authority. But when they could not do it, they ultimately chose to destroy him. They took his life. And we illustrated this with the use of a mirror, that in the beginning, God proclaimed his word. He declared who he was in everything that he made, everything he put his hand to. He wanted people to know that he existed. And Jesus came into the world as the revealed word of God. Paul, one of the writers of the Bible, said this: Jesus was the exact image of God. That if you wanted to know what God was like, look at Jesus. But that was so confronting. And so what we used was a mirror, and that mirror represented that revelation of God. And when I look in that mirror, I realize, ooh, it doesn't look right. And we want to blame the mirror as distorting that image, or we want to ignore what that mirror is saying to us, or we want to cover it up. But none of that works, and so ultimately, we smash it. We destroy it. And this is what the powers of that age chose to do. But that destroying became a sacrifice. And that shedding of his blood paid the penalty of the rebellion against God. And what we see on the Easter resurrection morning is that one whom they chose to silence, that one they wanted to destroy, would not be silenced and would not go away, and still stands at as a testament, a statement to the nature of God, and we don't get to silence it. Our choice is, as with any mirror, is as we look into that revealed word, I am confronted with, what am I going to do? Am I going to adjust myself in accordance with the image? Or am I just going to try and still deny it? Life, newness of life, broke the bondage of death. The dawning of that newness of light broke the bondage of darkness that held people in fear. And we no longer have to, except by choice, be bound over to death and darkness. No one has a reason to. Jesus' renewed life offers life and hope to anyone who will receive it. And wherever you are from today, if this is the one day a year you come, the offer is out here again. Maybe this is your first time here. The offer is here to you. Do you want life? Do you want life abundant? Do you want to let go of the ways of death, the ways of darkness? Choose to walk in that liberty. Listen to this that Paul wrote. Paul was a writer of a good portion of the latter part of the Bible. And I'm reading it from a translation called The Message, but Paul's speaking to some people in Rome, and he says this, it stands to reason, doesn't it? Or he says this, it's reasonable to think. And so this morning I say, man, it's reasonable to think that if the alive and present God, who had the power to raise Jesus from the dead, if that God moves into your life, he'll do the same thing that he did in Jesus. And he'll bring us to life in himself. And I love that Paul goes, it's fully reasonable, isn't it? Doesn't it stand to reason that if God has that power to bring a dead body to life, how much can he bring us a struggling, darkened soul to life? When God lives and breathes in you as he does and surely as he did in Jesus, you are delivered from that dead way of living. And with his spirit living in you, your body will be as alive as Christ was. And 30-ish years ago, I made a decision to accept this as truth. And it has transformed the way I live, the way I think, the values that I hold dear. It's changed them. It's been a long process, but man, I would never go back to that old way of living. And just as on that morning, no one expected Jesus to rise from the dead, and no one knew what to expect when they'd heard the news, we often don't know what to expect. Well, what should I expect? Well, if we trust God's character, it's a transformation for good. Yes, Jesus reveals our shortcomings, our failures, our sins, but he doesn't just point at us, accusing us. It's this invitation to restoration. He doesn't just point at you or show the image and go, ah, this is how much you've missed it by. Look at yourself. He doesn't do that. He reveals our shortcomings when compared to his likeness, but he goes, here, let me help. Let me bring that life. Let me bring that correction. Let me put it all right. It's a new lease on life, a renewed way of living, released from fear, from hiding, from insecurities, from despair, and ultimately from death. We live in the revelation of who he is. And honestly, in John chapter 20, and I'll give you 3 points really quickly. These 3 things are key if you'll choose to accept them. John, who was Jesus' closest friend, wrote this account. And he writes this account of post the resurrection, after Jesus has been raised from the dead. And it's the morning of the resurrection, and we start in verse 11 of chapter 20, and it's the account of a woman named Mary, a woman who had become a dear friend of Jesus during his life and was so grieved at this loss that when she's run and told some of Jesus' friends that he's alive, she comes back with them to the tomb. And Peter and John can't find Jesus there, and they go running off, but Mary stays. It says, Mary was standing outside the tomb, and she's weeping. And as she wept, she stooped again to look in. And she saw 2 white-robed angels, one sitting at the head, the other at the foot of the place where the body of Jesus had been lying. And they ask her this question, "Woman, why do you cry?" Now, this is really interesting to me. They identify her as woman. She's humankind. She is female in gender, and they just identify her as part of humanity. "You are woman." This is what they say to her. "Woman, why are you crying?" I do like that they say, "Dear woman." She matters to them, but it's a general statement. "Dear woman, why are you crying?" And she replies with this, "Because they have taken my Lord away and I don't know where he is. I don't know how to locate him." And she turns to leave. And she saw someone standing there. And I don't know if you've ever been that sad and that full of, you know, tears that your eyes, you're just blurred and your head's down. You just want to go. And she knows there's a man standing there. She didn't know it was Jesus. "Dear woman, why are you crying?" Jesus says. "Who are you looking for?" And she just thought he was the gardener and said, "Sir, if you've taken him away, tell me where you've put him and I will go and get him." And Jesus does an incredible thing. He moves from this generality of humanity to saying, "Mary." In that moment, she's no longer just the general populace. She's no longer just this mist in the cloud. She is a name and she is a face and she is known. Mary had come in the darkness of the morning and had come in the darkness of her soul with this deep, deep grieving. And in this, she knows her pain, but she's just part of this sea of humanity. But in this moment that Jesus engages her, he says, "Mary." And her response is this response of a student to a teacher that she wants to learn from. And she says, "Rabbi." And in that sense of naming him teacher, she's saying, "Reveal truth to me, teach me." In that moment, she was valuable. She's lifted from darkness to light, from despair to hope. And this morning, in the midst of all of this, there's the first thing I want you to know. Jesus knows your name. You are not just the sea of humanity. Here in Good Life this morning, you're not just representatives of this sea of humanity, the billions and billions. You are individuals by name that he knows. And he comes to us and he seeks us out. In the second part of this story, in John chapter 20, verse 19, that evening of the first day, the disciples, Jesus' friends, the ones who had followed him, they were gathered together behind locked doors and barred windows because they were afraid. They were afraid of the Jewish leaders. They were afraid of those that had put Jesus to death. They were afraid. But suddenly, Jesus was standing there amongst them. And one by one, he went down the line using their names, saying, "And you, why did you run away? And you, how come you're hiding? And you, that's a little weak, wasn't it?" Is that the account? No. Jesus comes into the room and with no question and no asking for account, in the midst of their fear behind barred windows and doors, he says this, "Peace." He doesn't ask for any explanation. He walks into the room. In the midst of them is Peter. Peter was the one who said to Jesus, big bravado, puffed out chest, "I will never abandon you. You want someone to count on? I'm your guy." And his final visual of Jesus, because there is no account of him at the cross, is his denial. And the third time he denies Jesus, it says that Jesus turned his face towards him. And Peter ran in shame. Peter. He's standing there in that room as Jesus appears. And Simon, one of Jesus' friends, who was the revolutionary, he was planning overthrow of Rome, and he thought Jesus was going to help it happen. And I imagine in the midst of his fear, he's already going, "What next? And what strategy now? Do I just quit?" Man, John and James, these two brothers that vied for position, that so wanted authority, they were asking Jesus to back them up. All of a sudden, their hopes and dreams are gone out the window. But Jesus comes into this room where all these runaways and deserters and big talkers and dreamers were. Their hope for peace was in their own strength and their own planning, and they were hiding behind bolts and bars, and they didn't want to be found. But Jesus comes into their midst, and he brings with him the fullness of the revelation of God again, and he speaks peace to Peter, to Simon, to James, to John, to Andrew, to Philip, to Bartholomew, to everyone in that room, women who were there afraid. He speaks peace. And here's the reality. He knows your name, but he also knows your need. And he doesn't need an explanation of what got you into the place of need that you're in. He doesn't need it. He needs you to know that he knows who you are and he knows where you are and he knows what your need is. Whatever brought you into this space this morning, I ask you that question. Are you afraid to be known? You know, sometimes when someone speaks your name, and you hear your name spoken, there's a part of you that wonders who's speaking it, but why are they speaking it? Is it someone who knows something about me? Do you ever walk in fear of being known? Do you ever walk in fear of your past? That what if someone who knew me or who knows that or who has seen that suddenly arrives on the scene in my new crew and goes, "Tim, Andrew, Angela, Elizabeth, Greta, Karen, Paul." You hear your name, is there anything in you that's like, "Who knows me?" Because there's parts of us that we don't really want to be known. But Jesus knows your name and he knows your need. What's your need today? Is it rest of spirit? Is it to be free of fear? Is it hope? Is it clarity? Is it trust? Is it faith? What is your need? Because I guarantee you, Jesus will walk into your space with the full knowledge of who you are and the full knowledge of your need and reveal himself. But the third thing that Jesus is aware of is what I would just simply call our no. Jesus knows our no. And why do I know that? Because listen, the last account here,
In verse 24 says this, one of the 12 disciples, Thomas, he wasn't with the others when Jesus came. And when they saw him, they told him, Thomas, we've seen him. Man, he's alive. And Thomas's response is this, no, I am not going to believe that. I won't believe it unless I see the nail wounds in his hands and I put my fingers into them. And I won't believe it unless I see that wound in his side and put my hand in it. This is how much Thomas has a no. No.
And then you read verse 26 and it says, 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them. The doors were still locked, but suddenly, just as before, Jesus was standing amongst them. And again, his declaration is, peace, peace be with you. How do you think Thomas feels right in this moment? I don't know if you've ever wanted to just shrink back into a crowd. Man, you don't want to be seen. And some of the other disciples step up because this is now the second time they've seen him. And they're excited to see him. But Thomas, he knows what his no was. And he knows if he's going to resolve that refusal, he's going to have to face something that he said. So I think he's hiding behind the shoulders of the other disciples and just kind of getting smaller, shrinking back a little bit. But then Jesus, he does the same thing. He turns to Thomas, knowing who he is, knowing what his need is, and he said this to him, Thomas, put your finger here. He offers him the wound. He says to him, Thomas, if that's what you need, then let's go there. Do you hear that? If that's what you need, Thomas, then go there. It's not off limits. And here, Thomas, if you need to put your hand in that wound so you know it happened, here it is. Do it. It seems horrific, but this is the reality of how much Jesus wants to overcome Thomas's no. And I wonder this morning if you came into this place with a no or a not yet. Or how many times you might have heard this before and you've never resigned yourself to it and allowed it to become personal. There's just this no. There's this sense of no, I don't need that. I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, I'm strong enough, I've got a good enough life. I don't need that. Guess what? As I said in the beginning, we are all sinners. And there's only one remedy to it, and that is to accept what Jesus Christ did in the sacrifice of himself for our sin. It's a gift that endures, and you have a choice to receive it or not, but is there a no in your life? Is there this arm folded? No. Well, Jesus comes because what he said to Thomas here, because Thomas's response is amazing. But Jesus says to him this, put your finger here, look at my hands, put your hand in the wound in my side, stop doubting and believe. What's it going to take? For me, I wanted to know, I did a lot of research. I am a creative, but I also am a lateral thinker, that I like reading facts and I like doing research. I read a book called Why I Believe. And I began to assess all sorts of archaeology and science and prophecy and history and all sorts of things. The existence of Jesus, the account of his life and his death is irrefutable. In fact, if you don't even read the Bible and you just look for Jesus in history, you will find the account of Christ that lines up with what the Bible teaches. Do the research sometime. So if you're doubting the existence of Jesus, stop doubting.
Start doing some research, and then you at least have to believe in the physical existence of Jesus. But then we're still confronted with what he said. Man, Easter is about liberty, it's about freedom, it's about light, it's about life. It is about the breaking of the bondage of darkness and death to give you hope from the front row to the back row to the side, from this neighborhood to the uttermost parts of the earth. That is the gift of God in Jesus. The question is, do you believe that he knows who you are? Because he knows your name. Do you believe he knows where you are and what you need? Because I guarantee you, as he walks into a space and says peace with no questioning about how on earth these guys got to that place, he walks into your life and he says peace. Come out of hiding, be known. And he would love to engage in your no. He would love to engage you in your not yet. So often we hear the word darkness and we think only of despair, but darkness is often that action of a child that says, I don't want to respond. I don't want to see. I don't want to believe. And so they shut their eyes and they just put their hands over their eyes and believe that if they cover it up, then all the reality has gone away. I don't know if you ever tried it as a child, but you thought if you shut your eyes, no one could see you. But we know the foolishness of that. And darkness is not just you in the most despairing and broken place in life. Darkness is sometimes we just shut our eyes and just say, make it go away. But it won't. And Jesus is not here that we would look upon him and feel condemned by what we see and the reality of my reflection, my comparison to him. He wants you to know that he loves you, that he knows you, cares about your need, and wants to deal with your no. And if you've responded to Jesus, man, this is a day of celebration. It's not just about life now. It's that God's got a day in mind that he will restore everything. We live in a world that's pretty broken. And it's easy to see that around us. But Jesus is going to one day restore it. And it'll never break down again. It'll be restored to everything he said it would be. And the invitation is for all of us to be a part of that. You become a part of it by admitting that, man, I've blown it. I failed, I fell short. And God, I need your forgiveness. Ask God to forgive you and he will. There's nothing beyond his reach. Humble ourselves. The Bible says very simply, whoever will call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Will be delivered from death to life, from darkness to light. And if that's you this morning, I invite you. Because we're going to close with a song that's just called Known. And the words of the song say, that you brought me out of my darkness into your glorious light. It's God who brings us out of captivity into liberty. Are there areas of your life you feel trapped in? You don't know how to overcome them. Things that you feel locked away in. Listen, Jesus will walk through any door, any bar, any lock, anything to get to that part of your life and bring you hope. So that same Spirit that raised Christ from the dead to bring life to you in every way, hear those three things again. He knows your name. He knows who you are. There is nothing about you hidden from him. He knows your need. Are you willing to acknowledge it? And he knows how to deal with your no. And he wants to. I think when Jesus talks to Thomas, he's not just abusive towards him. I think there's almost like this soft look on Jesus' face that he just says, Thomas, if that's what it's going to take, I'll go there with you. So this morning, I invite you, just listen to these words and see how you relate to them. See how you feel about the words. Do they ring true, or is there something that you go, no, I'm not there? Calling out to God is something that we call prayer. It's just praying. But if you've never responded, I'd start with just these words. God, I'm going to trust for a moment that you can hear me. And I'm going to say, I want to know the truth. Lead me to truth. Set my heart free. Set my mind free. Whether it's darkness that I've just shut my eyes, or it's darkness with things that have just blotted out light in my life. Forgive me and set me free. I want my life to align with yours. Would you restore hope? God, I thank you that you're a God who's willing to forgive. You're a God who loves me. And I choose that now. As Craig goes into this with the team, just listen to the words. And then if you choose that you want to, there's a wonderful chorus that just rises and says, it's in your presence, I know that I belong. It's in my weakness that I know that you are strong. And if you want to, I invite you to sing that part. Whether you want to stand or sit, it's up to you. And then I'll close the service. I'm glad we can be here together. I'm glad we can journey this together. He knows your name, your need, and how to deal with that no or not yet. He'll lead us out of darkness.